Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This was recorded live at DFTB 19. If you enjoy this podcast, you can find all our back catalogue available on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy.
It's now my wonderful pleasure to introduce, we have three tremendous speakers this morning, and I feel a little bit goosebumpy really. But I really want to introduce our first speaker, Shweta Gidwani. And Shweta and I had never met in person until this morning, but we'd had Zoom calls, and we've been having conversations and emails and things about the similarity of our goals for healthcare. Shweta is a consultant at Chelsea and Westminster NHS Foundation Trust in London. She has been involved in the development of emergency care service delivery and training programs in India for 7 years. And in 2018, she was awarded a Churchill Fellowship to research wellbeing initiatives across the world. Please make her welcome.
Is getting set up, we've got a favour to ask you. We've had an issue with chairs at the back. So what we need is for all of you to stand up and take the chair in front of you and bring it back and sit down on it so that we can create a row in the back, because there's a whole number of people, because we're fully sold out, there's a whole number of people who aren't able to sit properly. It's to do with the positioning of the actual chairs. So, unfortunately, it can't...
Just stand up and pull the chair that you're sitting on in front of you. That's what you want.
Pull forward.
Yeah? They want to make space, right?
Pull forward. Thank you. I think that's far enough forward. Very much appreciated.
Right, good morning. That's the stretching exercise done. Thank you, Grace. So, I'm Shweta, and I'm here to tell you my story. I remember the first time I saw a patient die in front of me. She was not old, but she had silver gray hair. She was not old, but her face was wrinkled in pain and in despair. I was an intern working in a casualty department that looked like this in India, in the bustling metropolis of Bombay, in a government hospital. It was 2002. The casualty ward looked a bit like this. It was one hall. It was the waiting room, the reception room, the observation ward, the ambulatory care, the relatives room, everything all in one space. And at one end, you had the emergency medical assessment area, and the other end across this hall, you had the emergency surgical area. And this lady, she was being wheeled across by her relatives from one end of the medical assessment area to the other end of the surgical assessment area, because she had this unfortunate, undifferentiated problem of epigastric pain. She was nauseous, retching, and sweating. And somewhere across this travel, through this corridor, I saw her face fall ashen gray and then lifeless. She died in the middle of this casualty area. She died because of chaos. She died because she was nobody's patient. You see, emergency care still today, in a large proportion of the world, is delivered like this, in a disorganized manner, by any willing provider, any physician, any doctor, any surgeon, usually the junior-most doctor in the hospital. Most people view this work as burdensome and as an interruption to their career progression. And most hospitals view emergency work as a liability. Even in India, a country that's actually seen peace for 60 years, a country that is the seventh largest economy, a country with a booming health industry that's pitched to be $280 billion by next year in 2020. It's evident that this disorganized and lack of emergency care is costing people's lives. But can you imagine the moral, physical, and psychological toll this is taking on the doctors and the healthcare workers working in this kind of a hostile environment, trying to do the best they can? Six doctors from my year alone in medical school have died from suicide. I won't go into why I left. That's not what I'm going to do today. I don't think I can. Move on a couple of years. It's now 2005. The healing power of distance and time has rejuvenated me. I'm now working as an emergency medicine trainee in the northwest of the UK in a functioning healthcare system in the NHS. No. And the joy is back. I am excited to be an emergency medicine doctor, doing what I want to do, be a doctor, you know. But I'm still haunted by the memories of my experience back in India, and I still feel this burning desire to want to go back, do something, make a difference, have some sort of impact, a little bit of a change. But then the reality hits me, right? The numbers and the scale and the magnitude of the problem is astounding. 150,000 people die from road traffic accidents every year in India. 167 women die from preventable pregnancy-related causes every day. More improved myocardial infarctions happen in India than anywhere else in the world, and India still has one of the worst neonatal and child mortality rates in the world. You know, and then there's me, insignificant me. No money, no power, no influence. What can I possibly do to make a difference? But here's the interesting thing about perspective. Perspective is transformed by the people we surround ourselves with. You know, there's some great research that's published in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology that tells us if you're looking at a hill and you're standing next to a friend, you perceive that hill to be 10 to 20% less steep than if you were standing alone. You know, the power of the people we surround ourselves with changes, has the ability to change our perspective. And I was really lucky to have that experience. So I went back to India several times, and I had multiple conversations with people and met lots of people, and I was met largely with a lot of hostility and negativity. But then I also met some incredible people who I developed wonderful friendships with. There was one person in particular who changed things for me, and that's Kate. She's the second woman on the left there. You see, you'll never find a picture of Kate on her own. She's always surrounded by people. That's just who she is. So Catherine Douglas is a global health emergency medicine leader. She's an educator, and she's passionate about this problem of the lack of emergency care and what it's doing to the humans in that system, the patients and the doctors. And she'd also been worrying about the problem in India and the scale of the problem, but she wasn't fazed by it. And we developed this incredible friendship, and we brought together our networks of people that we had knew, known, and developed over the years, people we shared the same values with. And we had lots of conversations and arguments and discussions, and through that tyranny of hows, we came to the conclusion that the only way we were going to make a difference is through education. We believed in the power of education. We believed that it was education alone that would save lives. So we decided we would teach. We would learn to be better teachers. We would teach to teach, and we would grow teachers. We would build a global network of teachers and bring them to India. And that's what we've done over the last 14 years, we've just been teaching and teaching and teaching. And this, you know, this incredible shared network, this network of shared values is what drove us through all the negativity. And we were not fazed by the scale of the problem. You see, emergency medicine wasn't even recognized as a specialty in India when we started teaching. It was only recognized in 2009. And even today, the Medical Council of India and the National Specialty Board have made a very dismal effort at training emergency doctors in India. They've only committed to training about 190 doctors every year. And because of corruption and lack of resources or disorganization, about 30% of those seats are still vacant. Now, that's woefully inadequate for a country of 1.3 billion. That's 1/7 of the world's population. If you compare what we have in the UK or in Singapore, that's one doctor for every 10,000 people, India would need 132,000 practicing emergency physicians to ever get to that kind of proportion. But we were not fazed because we had this network of shared values that we created. And I'm really excited to share with you what we've achieved over the last several years. You know, since we started teaching, we've created a network of over 200 teachers, both within India, but also from 7 other countries in the world. We've got teachers coming from India, UK, the Middle East, Bangladesh, and we have trained over 800 doctors. In 10 days' time, 100 doctors will be sitting a final exam in two parts of the country through a 3-year training program that we've created. We've partnered with 16 emergency departments across the country and created a network of emergency care, emergency medicine providers and trainers. But that's not what's exciting and awe-inspiring to us. The impact has far exceeded what we ever imagined. I'm going to tell you about 3 people. This is Dr. Venugopal. Many would call him the father of emergency medicine in India, rightly so. He started trying to change the emergency services within his small town in North Kerala in 2003. And we partner with him to start training doctors in his small casualty ward initially, that's now transformed into an emergency department. And he's trained hundreds and hundreds of doctors. But really what he's done is he's gone out into his community, and week after week, for years on end, he's been training lay providers to do basic life support and first aid and disaster management training. He goes out and trains every single week. He trains everybody and anybody, you know, members of the public, the police, the fire services, school children. You know, the scale of his training is absolutely astounding. We're unable to even compute the number of people he has trained. It's at least 250,000 people. And he does this with the uttermost dedication. He really believes in wanting to be able to make a difference. He's also trained the first generation of emergency care, paramedics and emergency care technicians. They don't even exist as a class in emergency in India. He's also founded the first and the largest voluntary ambulance service in Asia, 8,000 volunteers supporting the local government to be able to provide free trauma care and transportation for patients within the northern districts of Kerala. This is Fabit. He's the one standing nearest to the ultrasound machine in a traditional white coat. Fabith graduated in 2010, and he's a passionate educator. He's been bringing point-of-care ultrasound to trainees in India with the most amount of passion that you can ever imagine. And this is, you know, this is no small feat. It's an incredibly important resource and skill in low-resource settings. Fabit now heads an emergency department of his own. And this happened last year in his hospital. How many of you have heard of Ebola? How many of you have heard of Nipah virus? Well, you wouldn't have. You see, last year in May, at Fabert Hospital, a patient was identified to have Nipah virus. Nipah has the same case fatality rate as Ebola. It's a zoonotic virus. A patient came in with significant and severe meningoencephalitis and ARDS, and incredibly well supported and resuscitated, this patient made it to the intensive care department in a coordinated effort. They identified the virus within 24 hours. They contained the outbreak in 20 days, and only 17 people died. That's why you never heard about it. I'm absolutely sure if this had happened anywhere else, I think you'd all have, it would have made frontline news. You would have all heard about this. And this is Dr. Jenna. He's sitting in his reclining fancy chair in his department, the ambulatory care of his department, donating blood, because that's the kind of guy he is. But you remember that casualty department I showed you? That was his department in Meenakshi Mission Hospital in Madurai. When he started 10 years ago, the footprint of his casualty ward was 3 by 5 meters. It had 5 beds and no doctors. Today, that's what his emergency department looks like. It's got 15 beds, 29 trained emergency doctors, and that's the sort of care, recognizable care, that they provide. Patients now come from over 800 kilometers away to his hospital to receive tertiary level care. So it's been an incredible journey over the last 20 years since I went to medical school back in Bombay. And when I was thinking about what I've learned over these 20 years through my journey of change, I think it really boils down to 3 things. You know, if you want to do something and you want to make a change, then don't be bogged down by the tyranny of hows, because perception is reality. Change your perception to fit the reality that you want. And find yourself that network of people that you share values with. Because they'll be your moral compass should you drift. They'll help you find your way back. And finally, be like fireflies. You see, fireflies have got it right. They've understood the importance of reciprocal success. Should they light up individually and randomly, they only have about a 3% chance of finding a mate. But if they synchronize and light up an entire bush, their chance of finding a mate increases to 82%. You know, society has taught us that it's important to be, that perhaps it's all about being the single bright light in a dark forest, but really it's not. It's about being part of a really brightly lit forest. And finally, I'm going to leave you with this quote from the Aboriginal elder Lila Watson. She talks about, or sums up, really, the sort of psychotherapy process of reciprocal transformation, the idea that actually you heal and transform by investing in other people's success. So really, this journey of change has been all about my healing. Thank you.